Welcome to Bicycle Talk. I'm Pedlin Fran, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk on January 16th, 2019. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, please email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. Or if you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Okay, so here's the frant of the week. Ron does the rant of the week. I do the frant of the week. The frant of the week is people who insult indoor training. Okay, so people say, I don't want to train indoors. Why would you train indoors? I only ever train outdoors. I don't like it when people insult stuff to start with. But if you insult people doing indoor training and you insult indoor training in general, I think you're missing out. If you don't want to indoor train, that's fine. And if you are one of those people who, like, you get on your fat bike in any type of weather and that's really wonderful for you, and, you know, or you're just, you know, you don't have a temperature limit. You might have an ice and snow limit because you don't have the proper chains for your bicycle. And some people don't. They ride in any weather no matter what. You're totally cool. I think that's awesome. That's great. Not everybody wants to do that. And this is a wonderful world. We have diversity in this world and people like to do different things. But you shouldn't insult people who indoor train. I think indoor training is very useful. I really admire people who don't give up on their training no matter what. And they train in different ways. And, you know, when you train, when you do short and hard, when you do longer and easy, when you take rest, those are all good things. And I also, as a naturopathic physician, I tell people that you want to have three basic situations when you get exercise. You want to have something you can do outdoors, something you enjoy doing outdoors, whatever that is, whether it's walking or riding a bike or dancing outside, but something that takes you outside of your house, something that you can do indoors inside your home, whether it's a piece of equipment or it's following an exercise video or it's doing your own thing, turning on some music and dancing. You want to have something you can do indoors inside your home because sometimes you don't want to leave your house. The weather's bad. You don't have a lot of time. You want to have something that's right there, ready to go, that you can do at home. Then the other thing you want to have is something you can do outside of your home, but also indoors. And that way, you're in the habit of exercising wherever you are. So if you travel, you can work out in the hotel gym, or if you have a membership, like there are certain gyms that you can join where you don't pay a lot of money, but you can work out anywhere in the world if you go to that gym. So if you have a membership like that, that you get in the habit of doing that, and that's really great. And so the other thing is, and Ron is guilty of this, don't insult various kinds of indoor cycling. I'm an outdoor cyclist, and I really enjoy Ron's classes. He teaches cycling classes, indoor cycling classes that are designed to make you stronger on the road, and he teaches you road skills. And when I teach spinning or indoor cycling as well, I do the same thing. I teach you things that are going to help you when you're on the road. I do drills that are going to help you on the road, and they mimic things you might do on the road. But a lot of people don't. When you go to indoor training, you might be going to a spin class and they're trained by spinning. They're trained by Mad Dog. And Mad Dog has a certain way that they do things. And there are certain exercises that they do that aren't really useful for road training. But they are useful for maintaining your aerobic base. If you do something like SoulCycle, or they have the Tribe in West Hartford, or my buddy Deborah, big shout out to Deborah Johnson Fountain. She's amazing. I love her. Anyway, she has Life or Fitness out in West Hartford. You will go to classes where they do things that maybe you don't agree with. Like they'll do spin-ups where they keep you at 120 RPMs for a long time, for several minutes running, which, you know, we wouldn't do in our kind of class. Or they might do exercises on the bike where they're using weights on the bike, or they might be doing push-ups on the bike or moving their body side to side while spinning on the bike. don't insult them. There are people who are doing that. They're getting exercise. They're getting a workout. And maybe it's a little different than what you're doing. It's not something you would need to do as an outdoor cyclist. But you know what? It's there. You're getting your cardio. You are keeping your cardio base by doing it. And other people are doing it. And if they're enjoying it, it's wonderful. So it's not a good idea, even though, yeah, if you're kind of a bike snob and you're like, you know, if I'm going to do my indoor training, I'm going to do something, I'm going to do intervals that translate to the road. Yay. Good for you. But if you don't want to do SoulCycle, you don't have to. But don't look down on people who do it, and don't look down on SoulCycle. SoulCycle keeps people fit. It really does. Peloton, the Tribe, any of those exercises where you're doing different kinds of exercise on the bike, it gets people motivated and it's good for people. It's like they said on Breaking Bad, it's all good, man. So that's my friend. Be nice to indoor training. Also, if you're not indoor training, consider indoor training. If you're doing indoor training, it doesn't all have to be on the bicycle. And we'll get to some of that in a little bit. All right, so here's the positive side. Cyclists who understand why you should take rest days and why doing low intensity stuff is good for you. It's good to take days off, and it's also good to go slow. It's going slow to go fast is really important. So finding the art of riding slow is really good. And so when you go slow, what you're doing is you're benefiting your aerobic system. And when you open up, your blood vessels, when you open up your cardiovascular system, you're just going to have more reserve when you're trying to push it really hard. It keeps you fresh for the days when your legs really need to be at their best. So when you're, spinning, when you're doing your low intensity exercise, what you want to do is keep your heart rate low, at running about 65% of your max, whatever that is. And if you don't have a heart rate monitor, then use your ratings of perceived exertion. Rating perceived exertion is a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is very, very easy. 10 is the hardest, so hard you're about to fall over. So your ratings of perceived exertion should be a 2 or 3, very easy. My 65% max, I think it's like 120, maybe it's a little bit less, but you can't go by me. You have to go by you and how you figure out what your workout intensity is. You have to do a lactic, you kind of have to do a lactic threshold. You can also do the carvenin formula, or, there are charts you can find online to base your max heart rate on your age. I don't think that's very useful because your level of fitness can really dictate what your max heart rate is. I mean, and it's different genetically for different people, but if you can get a lactate threshold test, that's a nice thing to do. There are also some ways to do it. You can use some of the apps and they'll give you a fitness test that'll help you figure out what your max heart rate is without actually, you know, having to do a lactate. Because a lactate threshold test involves somebody standing there and taking your blood while you're working out. It's kind of weird. I had it done once where I was getting pricked on the ear, and I had it done once where my trainer was pricking me on my finger at various levels. And so what you do is you start working out, and you figure out you correlate the heart rate at which you start making lactic acid. And so the person who's testing you, they're going to take your blood and they're going to put some of that blood on a piece of paper, a treated piece of paper, and then they're going to put it in a lactate monitor, and it's going to tell you the level of lactic acid. And once the lactic acid gets over a certain threshold, it's once you have any, that's what it is. When you start you're not clearing your lactic acid as fast as you're making it anymore, you're anaerobic. So once you crush that threshold, that's a certain percent max. And then you can figure out all the way up and down what your max heart rate is, what your actual numbers are, because you're going to correlate your lactate threshold to an actual heart rate. And that's going to be a certain percentage of your max. And then you can calculate your max heart rate off that, and you can calculate all your zones, your zone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So also when you're training, you know, how fast you're spinning isn't so important. When you're trying to keep it easy, you want to spin it around the optimum RPM, which is about 90 RPM. And that's been studied that the 90 is a general optimum RPM. Everybody has their preferred cadence. And some people tend to spin slower and some people tend to spin faster. But 90 is optimal for a lot of people. That's what Lance Armstrong used to spin at. And maybe he still does. I don't know. But 90 RPM is about the optimal cadence. It happens to also be the optimal cadence for the turnover for running. And then you keep the pressure on your pedals light. So you're going to, if you're a slugger, you're going to spin at a faster rate than you usually do with not a lot of resistance on, because you're going to focus on your spin. Also, it should be fun. Maybe you go with a buddy who you could talk to, and then you try to solve the problems of the world and you talk about stuff. Or you do what I did with Elon Larson a couple weeks ago, and you ride around the neighborhoods and you talk about stuff and talk about the days of bike racing and what and all the different skills you can use, and you know, or you talk about you know, what it's like to ride in Connecticut versus riding in Florida or whatever, you know, to, you know, try to you know, come up with a great new idea for a fitness app. I don't know, something, but you want to ride at a pace where you could talk. So the other thing is to ride around and go exploring. Don't, because you're not worried about how fast you're going, you know, get lost and find the new routes, find that new road, find that new cafe, find that new place, you know, get lost on your bike. And, you know, if you have GPS, doesn't matter if you're lost, because you can find your way back. And in Italy, cyclists use the phrase fare una passeggiata in bici to describe the easy rides. It means going for a walk on the bike. Really, so like I said, you go anywhere you want to go and don't think about it and try to get lost and find a new road. And because, you know, if you are going to climb a hill, you're going to climb it really, really easy. So it doesn't matter if you encounter one. So you just go wherever and maybe you'll find a new road. So you just keep it light and you keep it easy. That's important to do. And when you ride easy like that, it's really good for your brain, because you're not putting pressure on yourself and you're enjoying yourself, and you can see nature. And if you're just riding on a trainer and you're going really easy, you can watch a show and not think about it. You know, just watch a favorite show, and you can watch an exciting show or a moderate show. Do what I did this morning and watch the Today Show, which was all right. You know, I'm kind of stressing because the weather's not so great this weekend, and I have to go to New Jersey. So if you take days to go slow, if you intersperse slow days, you're going to be faster because you're not going to be so burnt out. You'll also enjoy your cycling more because you're you know, you're not putting pressure on yourself to perform all the time. The maintenance minute, as if I know anything about bicycle maintenance. I really don't know much. I do know that if you're sweating on your bike indoors, it's a good idea to clean it off. Ron was going to tell me that there are some good solutions to clean your bike off with, and we didn't get around to that, so I'm still using, you know, orange stuff. orange stuff, that's a technical term, but I'm using a natural orange-based cleaner to clean off my saddle and my bicycle, and we're going to find out a better solution for that. But what I am going to say is that your saddle needs to be the right height, whether you're indoors or outdoors. So one of the things they trained us in when I was trained for spinning was that when you're in your saddle, where you want to be, obviously, you want to be in a position on the saddle where you don't have pain and you're in the optimum position of function. So position of function is a cool term that I learned from Dr. Titchrit. May he rest in peace. He was a chiropractor, and he was our anatomy professor at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine, which is now the National University of Natural Medicine. Anyway, so Dr. Titchrit taught me about the position of function. It's a really great term. And what that means, it's the position that a part of your body is in so you get the maximum benefit from it. So that position with your arm, I'll invite you, unless you're driving, I'll invite you to lift your arm right now. So if you lift your arm and lift it about halfway and relax it, okay? And then go ahead and bend your elbow, and your elbow should be bent, let's see, I want to say, that's not 45 degrees. That's probably about 60 degrees. And then allow your hand to just relax. And then have your arm lifted up about halfway up your body. That's basically the position of function of your arm, because you're going to recruit all of the strongest muscles in your arm. When you're talking about your legs, and when you're talking about your legs on the bicycle, the way there is a position of function when you are pedaling. And so in order to be in the position of function, the first thing that has to happen is your tuchus, your sits bones, those little pointy things they're bony prominence at the bottom, at the lower part of your pelvis. And if you push into your butt, you can feel them. And those sits bones need to be aligned with the back of your saddle. Sometimes you can scoot forward or scoot back depending on what you're trying to accomplish, but generally you want those sits bones to be aligned with the back of your saddle. So when you're seated, in the saddle, pedal wise, what you're going to do is you want to find that, when your foot is at 3 o'clock or 9 o'clock, I'm just thinking about the pedal stroke, depending on when you're, I guess if you're looking at it, if I'm looking at you and your pedal stroke, when your foot is at 3 o'clock, you want your knee to be at a 90 degree angle. And that's a very, that's good for your knee, and that's good for your function, because when your leg is lifted and your leg is at a 90 degree angle, it's very easy to recruit your glutes and your quads and your hamstrings, which are going to be much stronger than the muscles in your calf, right? So you want that knee to be at a 90-degree angle. If it's at an acute angle, meaning it's below 90 degrees, really bad for your knee. If it's at an obtuse angle, meaning it's more than 90 degrees, then you're not going to be able to get the power. You're going to be recruiting more of your calf muscles, and they're not nearly as strong as the muscles in your thigh and your butt. So 90 degrees at 3 o'clock. And then when your foot is all the way at the bottom of the stroke, you want there to be a slight bend in your knee. So your leg is going to be bent, I don't know, I want to say it's not going to be 180 degrees. It's going to be more like, I want to say 150, 160 degrees. There's going to be a slight bend in your knee when your foot is at the bottom of the pedal stroke. So that's a good position in your saddle. Then of course the saddle's going to have a fore and aft position, and that's going to depend on your top tube, how stretched out you are. And again, where you want to be. You don't want to be scrunched up and really close to your handlebars, and you don't want to be really stretched out. People have preferences about where they want to be, but again, I think the best place you want to be is in that position of, we just talked about the position of function in your arms. And by the way, when I said the position of function in your arm is going to be bent about 60. I was wrong. It's not 60 degrees. It's actually about the same as what I said for your leg. It's going to be more like 150 degrees. So straight arm, that's 180 degrees. So if your arm is slightly bent, you're looking at about 150 degrees. So you want your arms, you want to be able to relax your shoulders. Your arms are going to be bent at about 150 degrees, and that's where you want your hands to land on the handlebars, whether you're on the hoods or on the horizontal part of your handlebars. And then you're going to be the most comfortable that you're going to be. And then you're going to get the most benefit out of the positioning of your arms as well as your core. And then you'll be able to spin, and you're going to be able to recruit your big muscles, and you'll get the most benefit. So when somebody fits you on a bicycle, they should be taking all those things into account. So your saddle height is real important like that. And then your saddle placement fore and aft is going to be important. And if you're not into indoor fitness, but you listen to me and you try going to an indoor fitness class, and you go to a class that has fore and aft for the saddle, you can play with this. And also if it has fore and aft for the handlebars, not all spin bikes do. Not all indoor fitness bikes have fore and aft for the handlebars. Later models do. They're really cool when they have that. But you can play with all this yourself because, you know, on an indoor fitness bike, it's easy to adjust all these things because they're designed to be adjusted because all different people use them. You know, I find I'll go into spin class and the spin bike will be pulled up. The Kaiser bikes, they are lettered. Well, most of the bikes, I think the spinning bikes are also lettered as to height. So, you know, and my height, on a Kaiser bike, well, depending on the model, actually, the older model of the Kaiser bike, I need to set at level F for Fran. How cute is that? And there's another model where I have to set it lower and it's the same height. So I have to set it for my middle name, Elizabeth. So I set it for E for Elizabeth. So these saddles, bikes will have settings. And so the height tends to be a letter, and then the fore and aft for both the handlebars and the saddle tend to have a number. So you'll be able, if you can remember that, you can remember your setting for that particular bike, and then, you know, you can optimize it for yourself and you practice optimizing it. All right. So that's the maintenance minute. Get your saddle height right and get your position in the saddle right, and you'll be a lot more efficient and you'll have a lot more fun and you'll be able to do cool stuff in the saddle. Even if you're going indoors, you'll be able to get more watts out of your bike and you know, whatever your goal is. All right. How to get your weight down in the winter. I bet you want to hear this one, right? So I was just whining about that on Radio Naturopath, and now I'm going to whine about it here. once again, same deal here. Back in October, the eating season started, and it began with Halloween. Yay. So awesome. So there's too much sugar around in the house. One of the things with but now I get to talk about this in the perspective of talking about in terms of fitness and also in terms specifically of cycling. And I am a cyclist, so this is of concern to me. But, you know, you figure, well, I'm burning so many calories, I can eat a lot of calories, right? Well, in my case, I am a postmenopausal woman. Yippee! So that gives me a grand disadvantage in terms of losing weight. There's a meme going around on Facebook right now where him trying to lose weight. Okay, cuts cream out of his coffee. 1 week later, loses 10 pounds. Her does really hard aerobic workouts, eats only salad every day, cuts cream in her coffee, cuts calories by 50%, you know, sticks with it every single day. 1 week later, gain 1 pound. Told you, fat loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. Thank you, JTita. Okay. So if you want to lose weight in the winter, you know, you have that disadvantage that you get hungrier when it starts to get colder, especially where we live here in the north. And it's harder to wander outside at that time of year. You naturally want to slow down. And a lot of us have done our major events earlier in the year. I mean, some people get into cyclocross, but a lot of people don't. And for those of us who are just recreational cyclists, we tend to start cutting back on our cycling when the weather gets colder because the conditions aren't as good and not everybody likes to ride outside. Some people do, but I would say that they are the exception rather than the rule. And I know for me that in November and December, I don't particularly train. I stopped doing training, and I do that by design. I stopped doing intervals, and I just ride however I feel like it, which means I'm not going to be pushing myself as much, which is good for my head, but not always good for my waistline. And so then you get to January, and you're like, oh my goodness, I've got to do something about this. And so you have to remember that you have to do something that you're going to stick with, and you can't do anything that's too restrictive. Because you know why you can't do anything that's too restrictive? Because you won't do anything that's too restrictive. That's how it works. People, I see this all the time. People go on the HCG diet where they're taking human chorionic gonadotropin, which is the hormone that babies make when you're in utero, and they eat 500 calories, and a month later they lose 30 pounds. And then when they go off the HCG diet, they gain it all back. And I see people doing various kinds of restrictive diets and they find them really hard to stick with. The really super restrictive ones, I've seen people, any diet where they have you restrict calories down to, say, 500 calories a day, people gain the weight back. They don't stick with them. So if you're, the first thing you do is you make better food choices. And here's some suggestions. This is a good Bicycling Magazine suggestion. One of the things they say is don't cut out entire food groups. And so if you're, if you want to go keto, you kind of have to do that because if you're going to be in ketosis, you can't really eat carbs. And the ketogenic diet may be good for some people who are cyclists. It's probably not going to be good for a lot of people. And most people who ride bikes don't do ketogenic. I did have a patient who was a long distance cyclist who was ketogenic for a while. And he said to me, well, when I ate keto, I could get on my bike and I could ride long and I could ride really long and I could ride forever. But boy, ask me to sprint, forget it. Ask me to have power, forget it. Ask me to get up a hill easily, nope, not happening. But he could ride for 3 days without stopping. So when you're burning fat as a fuel like that, it helps you for the long haul. And you do want to be fat adapted, because if you are fat adapted, you are going to have lower fat stores, and then you improve your strength to weight ratio, which is going to be helpful for getting you down the road or getting you up the hill. However, if you are too fat adapted and you can't burn, quick carbs right now, you might have a hard time sprinting up the hill, and you might have a hard time sprinting altogether. And I don't know about you, but I'm never going to be one of those tiny, skinny hill climbers. I can get myself up a hill because we live in northeastern Connecticut, but I'm kind of stocky. And when I train, I enjoy my hard, fast intervals more than I enjoy hill repeats and hill climbing. I can do the hills, but I have more fun, pushing it out and leaving. I like doing time trials. I enjoy leaving it all on the road like that. And that's because my body's suited to that. That's why I like that. And of course, they always say, well, you should train the thing that that's the hardest for you. But I'm very, I also like to train for the thing I'm suited to because it's fun. So if you cut out entire food groups, it's going to be harder to stick with that. So if you eat a variety of foods, you're going to do better. You're going to be more likely to cheat if you cut out an entire food group. So if you eat no carbs at all, if you're going to do a great ketogenic diet and you can do that, that's great. But just generally, if you do that, you're going to wind up wanting that thing and wanting to eat it later. And my patients who eat keto, they fall off the wagon. That is a thing that happens. You should pay attention to your cravings. So when the cravings occur, it might be because you're not nourishing yourself. There's something that you're missing. So look at what you should do is look at when you're having the craving. Is it happening after a hard ride? Is it happening after a hard training? I know when my cravings happen when I've seen patients all day and then I have to chart and then I'm not going home to dinner for a couple of hours. And that's when I want the chocolate. And the chocolate's sitting there on my desk and I want to eat it. And what I really should be doing is having a healthy snack that makes me less hungry. If you're having cravings, there's probably a nutrient that you're looking for. Often it's good quality protein and good quality fat. So before you go having a whole box of cookies, it might be a good idea to top up on those things. If it's not easy to do where you are, that's when you want to keep bars around and keep protein shakes around or things to make a protein shake with. Or, like a good late afternoon. You tend to get hungrier in the late afternoon because you're getting tired. Your cortisol is going down and you may still be engaged in activities. So you tend to want to pick at that time of day. And that's when your cortisol is going down like that. then and you start eating carbs, you're not going to have the energy to burn those carbs. You're going to be more likely to store them. So at that time of day, it's really a good idea to eat more savory stuff and more protein and fat. So, you know, in the afternoon, you might want to consider, I do keep chocolate in my desk, and I really need to take a look at that. But the other thing I keep in my desk is beautiful turkey jerky that I get from the health food store. So it's organic turkey jerky. Jerky and, preserved meat snacks. There's a whole line of bars called Epic, and they make meat-based treats. And they're essentially different kinds of jerky, and they come from different animals. But you can get different kinds of jerky. That might be a nice snack. Nuts and seeds and fruit together, taking an apple or a pear and slicing it up and spreading it with some, your favorite nut butter is a good idea. And then you may not crave stuff as much. If you're craving, and especially if you're craving sweet, you may be needing more protein and fat, and then you want to eat healthy protein and fat. One of the fats that I love to recommend to people is medium chain triglycerides, MCT, medium chain triglycerides. It's really cool. They're supposed to help with fat loss. I do find them energizing. I've been taking some the last couple of days, and you can't believe the stuff I got done the last couple of days. But medium chain triglycerides are something, if you can stomach them in your water bottle, you could put them in there. I don't do that because when I'm exercising, my stomach's a little sensitive. I have to do, fluid with some kind of carbohydrate, and I don't really do well with protein in my water bottle. And some people do, and they do great with that, 4-to-1 carb to protein ratio. Not me. I have to have a little bit of carbohydrate or not much at all, and some electrolytes, and that's it. And so different bodies are going to have different things. But like I said, if you're craving, and if you're like, all right, I want to eat a whole box of cookies, go increase your protein and fat. And then after you've had a good meal where you satisfied yourself with protein and fat, have one cookie and have the kind of cookie you like. Because if you don't have the kind of cookie you like, you're going to hate life. I think it's important to do. The reason you like those gluten-free ginger maple creams with one of the cookies is chocolate is not because there's something wrong with you. It's because they're delicious. It's okay to think fudge from Munson's is delicious. It's true. It is. But if you have a fat loss goal, you have to figure out when and how often and how much to eat it. I'm telling you that one way to do it is to limit how much you eat, limit yourself to 3 bites, and have it after a meal where you've had your fill of protein and vegetables. Why do that? Because you've already filled up on protein and vegetables, and it blunts your insulin response. So you're going to be less likely to store those carbs as fat. So having dessert is not necessarily a bad thing. You just don't want to have a huge amount of dessert, and you want to have, limit it to like 3 bites. And if you want more than 3 bites, then you make the dessert super healthy. And I can explain how you do that in a little bit. But if you have cravings, go for that protein and fat. I was talking about this on Radio Naturopath. Don't be a slave to the scale. There's an argument to be made that weighing yourself regularly provides accountability, helps reinforce your efforts to follow New Year's resolutions, but it can really upset you. Why? Testify, Dr. Tita. Fat loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. And some people suggest don't even do the scale. Because instead of focusing on the scale, I say focus on tracking. Focus on tracking your fitness, your exercises. Make sure you have a fitness log of some kind, whether you're using MyFitnessPal or Strava or iCardio or whatever app you like to use. Or have a notebook. That's a perfectly good log. Have one of those fitness logs that you get as a premium for subscribing to a magazine. Doesn't matter. Track it so that you can look at it and be proud of what you did. Focus on how you feel. How do your clothes fit? Do you have the energy to do your workout? Listening to your body is much more important than what's going on with your weight. And you have to remember that if you're going to weigh yourself, your weight's going to go up and down. That's just what it does. And especially if you're female, because we have fluctuations in water weight based on what's going on with their hormones. And that's going to happen to some extent with men as well. But if weighing yourself makes you nuts, I'll say it. I've said it before. I'll say it again. And that's that. What's the first rule of Fight Club? Don't talk about Fight Club. What's the first rule about weight loss? Don't talk about weight loss. I'm not kidding. Because talking about the weight loss is not something you do. It's something that happens as a result of what you do. So celebrate the successes that you have had by eating that healthy meal, by getting that good workout, by doing those great intervals, by how much time you spent in zone 4, which you have recorded on your app. It's really cool. Those kudos that you got because you posted your trainer road onto Strava, whatever. Okay. So that's the thing to celebrate. If you focus on the weight itself, it'll make you nuts. Also remember, this is a great one. Remember that your nutrition needs are unique to you. And this is something I say to my patients all the time. What's the best diet for you? So I don't know, whoever you are within the sound of my voice, let's pretend your name is Joe. Joe, what's the best diet for you? I'll give you a hint. It has a very special and exciting name, and it's got really special and exciting things that you get to do. You know what it's called? It's called the Joe Diet. That's right. What's the best diet for me, Fran? The me, Fran diet. What's the best diet for you, Diana? The Diana diet. What do those diets look like? It depends. Everybody's different. So one of the things that's interesting about diets is you can roughly categorize people, and I do emphasize the word roughly, into 3 metabolic types. And people have done this, and it is a useful tool to use. There's protein type, carb type, and mixed type. And I, Fran, am definitely a mixed type because when I try to do a protein type diet is basically going to be ketogenic, very low carb. You're going to eat mostly protein and vegetables and fat, and that's going to essentially be a ketogenic diet. Some people eat that way and they feel fantastic when they do it. I never feel fantastic when I do it. I tried to do it once. I did it for 2 weeks and I will never do it again because in that 2 week time, you know how they talk about the keto flu, how you feel lousy when you first get rid of your carbohydrates and you feel yucky for a while and then after a while you feel fantastic. Well, that you feel fantastic. I never got over the keto flu. I had 2 weeks of keto flu, which did go away until I put raspberries in my mouth and then I was fine. So that's a great test because I figured out that I'm not a protein type. I'm definitely a mixed type. I'm certainly not a carb type because if I eat lots of carbohydrates, I gain weight. But if I do that sweet spot in the middle, that's what works for me. And I think most people in the United States are mixed because we know that most people aren't protein types because obesity is rampant. 70% of Americans are overweight and something like 30-40% of them are obese. So if that's true, most people are eating off type. And what do most people eat too much of? Starches and sugars. If you're, and this is a gross generalization, but a lot of dudes are eating their sandwiches and they're eating their pizza and they're eating, meat-based stuff that has a lot of carbs in it. And what are women eating? We're eating sweets. So, and we're eating too much of it. And even if the sweets are happening in the coffee. So, and the thing we tend to do with coffee is we get the coffee and we put the cream in it and the cream has sugar in it. So when you mix fat and sugar together, guess what you get? You get stimulated neuropeptide Y. Neuropeptide Y turns off your satiety and opens up your fat cells and says, hey, fat, come on in. So when you eat combinations of fat and starch or fat and sugar, it elevates your neuropeptide Y and you gain more weight. So pizza, lots of starch, lots of white starch and lots of fatty cheese, great for gaining weight. And what do you want after you have one piece of pizza? Another piece of pizza, right? That's because that neuropeptide Y is turning on and you can, before you know it, you've eaten a whole pizza and you've eaten, 1500 calories. What's the other thing that's got all full of fat and sugar and you can eat an unbelievable amount without even trying? Ice cream, right? Lots of fat, lots of sugar, and you can finish a pint and you're in for, again, depending what it is, could be 600,000 calories. that's why they've invented those brands of low-calorie ice cream, where if you wind up eating the whole pint, it's not such a big deal. Like, there's less than 300 calories in a pint. So they do that by whipping it and putting artificial sweeteners in. Well, not necessarily artificial, but low-calorie sweeteners in it, so that you can eat the pint and not feel so bad about it. But anyway, in terms of your nutrition needs, whether you decide to go keto or paleo or just cut calories or cut carbs or eat more carbs and just stop eating sugar, it's going to be different for different people. Some people are going to do great on the keto diet. Some people are going to do terrible on it. And most people are going to do great with moderation. Moderation is really the place to go. So figuring out what you want to do. And don't get discouraged. You know that for most people, dieting doesn't lead to long-term weight loss. And depending on where you are in your life, you are going to yo-yo. It just depends on what's going on in your life. If you're under a lot of stress, if you're one of those people, if you're like me, you know, you're working really hard, you're working out when you can work out, so you're under a lot of stress. And then I'm also a postmenopausal woman. So I've got the odds stacked against me. And so I'm watching the scale go up a little by little already. So there's some things I need to tweak for sure. But I know that if there comes a point where I don't have to work as much, where I can cut back on my work, then I'm going to be able to focus on me a little bit more, and I'm going to be less stressed, and I'll be able to focus on my diet. And the other hope that I have is I see my mother, who, you know, genetically is similar to myself. She's retired, and I see her eating ice cream, and I see her at a really healthy weight. And so that gives me hope. But again, what does she do that I don't do nearly as much of? Rest. When she is tired, she rests. She gets enough sleep every night. If she feels tired, she sits down. I don't get to do that all the time because I'm running a business. And so that's the thing. You have to forgive yourself, because, you know, there are circumstances in your life that make it hard, and you have to be kind to yourself. So what you do is you figure out a plan that works for you. And what I just recommend is just really basic good nutrition. Once again, shout out to Michael Pollan. Eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Whether you're a vegan or you're eating paleo or you're eating Primal Blueprint, which is basically paleo plus dairy. So you're no grains, but you do get to eat dairy. If you're eating keto, you still have to eat mostly plants. And if you eat mostly plants, plants have a lot of nutrition in them. They have a lot of fiber, which is going to set you up for good probiotics. It's going to set you up for regularity. For if your digestive system is working really well, you're going to tend to weigh less. If you eat more fiber, you're going to tend to weigh less. And if for the most part you're eating really healthy food, you know, lots of, the balance of what you're eating is non-starchy vegetables and less sweet fruits. So non-starchy vegetables, that means your leafy greens, your salads, stir fries, roasted vegetables. So your carrots, radishes, onions, garlic, cucumbers, zucchini, yellow squash, all those things are non-starchy vegetables. And if you're eating small amounts of starchier vegetables like potatoes and sweet potatoes, they have resistant starch in them. They can help you with fat loss too. The focus on the ways that you want to take care of your body. And don't be super hard on yourself. Also, get help from someone who can help you. Go see a naturopath. You can go see a dietitian or a nutritionist. Get somebody to help you to dial in your diet and give you a plan. Get some new, go online and get good recipes for the direction you want to go. If you're like, I want to eat a plant-based diet, but I don't know what to eat. So go online and get some recipes, or go get a cookbook and get some recipes. Dish that's just mostly vegetables is really going to help you, regardless of what else is in it. And you may still be able to have a little bit of sweet. And like I said, a good way to do sweet is to do it after having eaten a meal where you've had your fill of protein and vegetables. So if you are like, I don't think I can give up sugar entirely, Okay, well, let's unpack that a little bit. Maybe you'd like to have a little bit, like instead of having sugar in your coffee, maybe you'd like to have a small amount of coconut sugar or honey or maple syrup. All of which, if you can manage to not do too much of it, those can help to stabilize blood sugar and help with fat loss. All three of those. So coconut sugar, grade B maple syrup, and raw local honey. Those are all selections that taste good and might be nice to have in your coffee or in your tea, whichever you prefer. If you want to have dessert, consider having just fruit. And, you know, if you have it as something you're eating after your meal, maybe it will feel like dessert. If you don't want to have just fruit, consider making a fruit crisp. And fruit crisps can be paleo, and the fruit crisp can be not so paleo. Here's a suggestion if you want to make it paleo and have no dairy in it. So what you do is you get nice Granny Smith apples. And Granny Smith apples are nice because they're sour, they're low in sugar, and when you bake them and you mix them with other things, they're not excessively sweet. So you cut up Granny Smith apples. So say you're going to do, I want to say a 4x4 pan. So you take your pan. I don't find that I have to grease the pan. Take four good-sized Granny Smith apples and cut them up and throw the Granny Smith apples in a bowl as you're cutting them up. And then you drizzle on some maple syrup, a whole bunch of cinnamon, great blood sugar regulator, tastes really good, smells really good. Dump on a whole bunch of cinnamon. If you want to, you can do pumpkin pie spice, which has a bunch of things in it, cloves and allspice and a bunch of other things along with the cinnamon, or just do the cinnamon. And then drizzle on a bunch of maple syrup, the grade B maple syrup, and then drizzle on a bunch of coconut sugar. And then use your hands and mix, or a big spoon, and mix it all together so that there's some coconut sugar and maple syrup all over the apples. Dump the apples into the pan. Next, you're going to make streusel. And if you want to make it paleo, you're going to use a bunch of virgin coconut oil. And if you, if you use virgin coconut oil, then if you're going to make streusel, you can't use oats if it's paleo. So you use virgin coconut oil and coconut flour and a whole bunch of cinnamon and coconut sugar and a bit of maple syrup. And you mush that together and you make it as sweet as you want to. And I just taste it as I go. You mush it together and you're going to make enough so that you can make a nice covering over the top of your apple crisp and of your apples. And then you bake it. And you bake it until it's a little bit browned on the top. And then you have this delicious thing. If you don't need it to be paleo, then instead of the virgin coconut oil, use grass-fed butter or grass-fed butter from grass-fed cows. The butter isn't grass-fed. The cows are grass-fed. Get butter from grass-fed cows. You're probably going to need a half to three-quarter sticks of butter. Or you're going to need 1 to 3 sticks of butter. And then to that, you can add oats. And you can add all-purpose gluten-free flour if you want to, but if you want to keep the carbs down, I would say do almond meal or coconut flour. The coconut flour is going to tend to be a little lighter in your stomach than the almond meal, so I would do a little coconut flour, and then I would do organic oats and mix that with the butter, and I would throw in a ton of cinnamon, a little bit of maple syrup, a little bit of coconut sugar to taste. And then now you have a nice streusel once again. And I wash my hands really well, and then I mush it up with my hands. It's so exciting. It's so nice. It's really fun. And then you mush that all together and you throw it on top of your apples and you have this great dessert. And it's going to be much healthier. It's going to be super high in fiber. It's got oats in it, which also has resistant starch. Resistant starch goes through your body a little bit slower, keeps your blood sugar regulated. It's going to give you good probiotics in your digestive system. It's going to help you keep your weight down. And you'll feel like you're eating dessert, and that will be really awesome. And the apples are high in flavonoids. They're going to help to strengthen your cardiovascular system, to help your immune system. So you feel like you're eating dessert, and yet everything in it is really healthy. Notice how I didn't say because you're going to bake that as well, and you're going to put that in the oven. You wind up baking it at about 350, and you wind up doing it for about 35 to 40 minutes. Again, you're going to watch it and see, and you're going to watch for the, You're going to watch for it to turn a little bit brown, and then you're going to take it out, let it cool, and then it's super delicious. If you want to jazz that up, you don't have to use just Granny Smith apples. You can throw berries into it. Berries and cherries, good low sugar fruit, really delicious. So you can get organic berry mixes frozen, and this time of year they can be frozen. You can get frozen organic berries and put them in. Really, you're going to get more antioxidants, and you're going to get great fiber in those and good blood sugar regulation from all of that. And then you feel like you're having dessert. It's really nice. So those are, that's some help. And so those are things to do for fat loss. Eat more plants, eat food, not too much, mostly plants, add beans to your diet, add protein to your diet, cut down on the carbs to a level that works for you. Do eat some sweets. If your thing is fudge, have little 3 bites of fudge after your dinner. Don't worry about the scale so much. Do celebrate your successes, and then you'll lose some fat during the year. And then do your indoor training, do your winter training, whatever that looks like for you. All right, what else did I want to talk about? I wanted to talk about how great is swimming. This is what we'll finish out. How great is swimming? So you cyclists, some of you swim and some of you don't. And those of you who swim, you know how great it is. It's great. If you don't swim, please learn. Why am I saying this? So first of all, you have to have an indoor pool, and I'm lucky enough to have one at the Mansfield Community Center. So if you're listening to my voice locally, we've got the Mansfield Community Center. There is a pool at the Y in Ellington. If you go to Plainfield, they have a pool there. They have a rec department with a pool in Plainfield as well. Here at UConn, you have a pool, and they're building a new one at the new athletic center. Eastern Connecticut State University, there's a pool over there as well, and the public can use it if you join the Booster Club. So you've got some options for swimming. Getting in the water is awesome. First of all, it's really soothing. I find it really soothing to get in the water. If you are on a bicycle, as you know, when you're on the bike, you're in that cockpit. And in the art of yoga, when you're doing yoga asanas, when you're doing the asanas, which are the poses in yoga, of course, by the way, yoga is really good for you too, especially if you ride a bike. When you're on the bicycle, you basically do one yoga pose the whole time, chair pose, for hours at a time. Chair pose, chair pose, chair pose. Yoga was never designed to be just one pose. The cool thing about swimming is that you're in different poses all the time. You do different strokes, and you're stretching out your body, and your whole body gets to participate. And it gets to participate while you're supported by water. It's so great, and it feels so good. And the cool thing about swimming is you can get a really good workout and really stress your cardio. You can stress your cardio and work out really hard, and you can also go really easy, and it feels really good because you're supported by that water. But instead of being stuck in this one position, you get all stretched out, and you get to use different muscles, and you get to use different parts of your body. And guess what else? In order to swim properly, you need to engage your core, so you get a good core workout as well. The nice thing about swimming is, you know, because we're stuck in that position all the time, it's one of the best cross trainings for cycling, because it supports your body so much. I mean, you can go cross country skiing and skate skiing are really great cross training, and also speed skating are also terrific for cross training for riding a bicycle. But they're not as accessible to everyone. You have to have good snow, and we don't have any snow right now in Connecticut. And for right now, if you wanted to go cross country skiing today, you'd have to drive to Massachusetts or to Vermont or New Hampshire. You have to go up north, so we can't do it here. Likewise with skate. Now, ice skating, you could go to an ice skating rink and do that. Ice skating is much harder than swimming. Well, not everybody can swim. It's true. But swimming is something you can learn. And the thing with swimming is it's a pleasure, and you can take that pleasure into all seasons, and you can wind up swimming in natural bodies of water. So if you can do it, what's so great about it is you get an upper body workout, which is something that we can be lacking when we're cycling. I know that a lot of people don't necessarily do resistance training for cycling, and especially this time of year, but in general, doing some resistance training is a good idea. But the neat thing about swimming is you're doing resistance training, but you're not weightlifting, you're ambulating, which can be very nice. So it is great cross training because it stretches you out. It uses different muscles. It uses some of the same muscles, and it accesses your core. In order to stay on the surface of the water, you have to access your core. Speaking of core, doing core exercises, getting a good core exercise workout is great. Some people do this core challenge where they work their way up to doing, like, I don't know, 60 or 100 push-ups during the course of the workout by doing a plank, and they work their way up to doing 5 minutes of plank. And if you want to do that, that's great, because if you're in doing a challenge, the challenge is going to keep you motivated. I just want to point out that if you want to have a good strong core, it is not necessary to do a 5 minute plank, that if you work your way up to a 1 minute plank, that is more than adequate. And especially if you're doing a core workout where you're doing planks on the front and on the side, and you're also doing some kind of crunch. I don't do straight up and down crunches. I do oval crunches on the ball, where I move my body in an oval. If you're doing things like bird dogs and dead bugs and bridges and leg lifts and leg drops and things like that, those are all really great core exercises. So if you mix it up a little bit, you're going to have a strong core. And, you know, I think the plank is just invaluable. It's really a great exercise. Ruth Bader Ginsburg does planks, but planks are a really great simple thing that you can work up to. If you can do a good plank and hold it, and if you can hold it for a minute, that's great. If you can hold it for 30 seconds even, that's great. And you don't even have to do it every day. If you're going to do planks, you know, this time of year, you can be doing them every day, but I don't think it's a good idea to say to yourself, I'm going to do this thing every day, because you probably won't. And then when you don't, you're going to be upset with yourself. But you can get benefit from doing core as little as twice a week, because that's what I wind up doing in the summer often. But it still will help. 2 or 3 times a week for core at minimum, and you're going to get some benefit from it. And core is, if you want to do more, core is something you can do every day if you want to. So go swimming, do some core. All right, I have to wrap up because it's getting to be that time. Let me just tell you about a couple of events. The Farm to Fork Fondo is now, you can go to www.farmforkfondo.com. The new season is coming up. This year, we're not going to New Jersey and we're not going to Maine, but we are going to Asheville, North Carolina, and we're going to Louisville, Kentucky. How exciting is that? The kickoff will be at the Hudson Valley in Warwick, New York on June 9th, 2019, and Ron and I plan to be there. Also, if you're a woman and you're going to be in Florida in early May, on May 5th, 2019, is the Gulf Coast Velo's first Tour de Femme. It will be based in or around Sarasota, Florida, on the west coast of Florida. I'm planning to be there, and if your travels take you to Florida, that's something to think about. They don't have all the details yet, but you can look up Gulf Coast Velo's Tour de Femme. There is a website existing, just the details aren't there, and it is May 5th, 2019. It's the first Sunday in May. All right. So you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with me, Pedlin Fran, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have been listening to this live or on podcast and would like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. That's bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Fran. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.